weird. My dick was huge, and I rode a big horse, and I shot everyone that I saw.
You're still listening. This is our final transmission.
We're here, Jamie. I'm here. You're here. We're here.
We are here. Sam, I've got a surprise for you.
Oh, already?
Yeah, we've actually got a very special guest with us today.
Who is it?
It's our good friend, your friend of mine, Tom Bonahawk.
Hey, Tom Bonahawk. How you been, bud? Well, howdy, y'all. It's your old pal, Tom Bonahawk here. Let's saddle up and ride this kitty till the sun comes up. How's that? Is that what Tom Bonahawk would sound like?
Yeah. Should we interview Tom Bonahawk?
Do I then have
Bonahawk?
To keep talking to my fucking self as Tom Bonahawk? This is like my D&D campaign.
So, Tom, where are you from? Tell us more about you.
I'm from Tallahassee, Florida. We got real good peaches. Is that true? Do they grow peaches in Tallahassee? Who knows? Who knows? If you know, stop what you're doing, and as you're already rating this podcast one star, out of correction as to whether or not they grow peaches in Tallahassee. Welcome to the Final Transmission Podcast. We're here to talk about Bone Tomahawk today, a 2015 2 hour and 12 minute horror western.
Yeah, so I've been itching to talk about westerns for a long ass time.
Why?
Because I love a western, Sam.
Ditto. We're in the same territory here.
And this was just like a sneaky way of talking about this Western, which we will. It was my first time seeing it. But also, I thought maybe...
Which is fascinating. Like, come on, we got to fucking take a moment here. You hadn't seen this film before we started the podcast, and you hadn't seen it until recently. So that's astonishing to me. Why?
It's 2 hours and 12 minutes. And when I'm looking to watch a film that I've not seen, that passed me by at the time of release...
Yeah.
2 hours and 12 minutes just won't cut it for me, frankly. It's too many minutes.
It's got to be 90 minutes or 3.5 hours, right?
Yeah, like when I'm looking to watch a film, I spend 45 minutes trying to find a 90-minute film.
Yeah, right. I guess the difference here is that, spoilers, this is a phenomenal piece of filmmaking. I hope you agree. We'll find out more in a moment. But how did you miss this? Upon theatrical release, I would have thought you'd be front and center, ready to watch it at your local insert cinema chain here.
I mean, I wasn't. I don't know what I was doing in 2015, but I don't think I was watching films in the cinema.
Interesting. Taking a break.
Yeah. And one criticism that I have of this film is the same criticism that I have of the trailer, in which it is color graded to within an inch of its life.
It's color graded to be the color of your boots.
Yeah, it's absolute fucking sepia nightmare. And I think I might have seen a glimpse of the trailer and was like, well, they've tried to make their not very good looking film look like a film by making it sepia.
So the sepia, I say sepia. Is there an alternative pronunciation for sepia?
I've heard people say sepia, but they might just be fucking idiots, Sam. I don't know.
They can shut the fuck up. They probably say like calamari. Or they probably say
nobody says calamari like that except Tom Bonahawk, maybe.
Yeah,
what do you say, Tom?
I say calamari. Calamari and jalapeno milkshakes, what I'd like this morning, please. Listen, I saw this and the way it looked and thought, fucking finally someone's getting the look of a western right. And you saw it and went, nope, I'm out.
I just, it felt quite inauthentic to me. It was like, let's make our, do you know, like when they try and make films look like old films and it just never quite looks right. And every now and then someone will do it and it'll look right or it'll feel right.
Hmm.
But that's my biggest criticism. We're not even into the synopsis yet. And I'm already laying into it. But yeah, that's my biggest criticism of Bone Tomahawk is that I felt like it didn't look authentic.
Well, before we continue to slag it off and tear it to shreds, can you give me an example of a Western that you think strikes that balance well. Just for, as a reference point for our listeners, what's a, because I always hated how the John Wayne westerns in particular would have like this crazy contrast and saturation on anything brightly colored. So you'd have John Wayne in like a sepia landscape that's supposed to be, you know, ancient as the fucking hills, and then
wham, these bright,
like a bright leather holster or something. Yeah. Like, so you know, I don't like that.
That's what happens when you shoot the Monument Valley in Technicolor. Mm. The Monument Valley looks like the Monument Valley, and everything else is like glowing at you. I mean, my it's not going to surprise you, Sam, that my favorite westerns are all Italian.
Yeah, I thought they might be.
I love any western that's got 15 words in the title. Okay. Satana, if you see me in the street, shoot me before I shoot you, or whatever. Like,
yeah, classic.
All okay, of that so, stuff.
And those are very stylized. I mean, I can't imagine there's an enormous amount of even thought that goes into how the color in those movies looks.
Well, Sergio Leone put a lot of thought into what the films looked like, and they made their films look like Sergio Leone films. So
imitation is the highest form of flattery, right, Tom Bonehawk? Sure he is. okay.
I so love Tom Bonehawk.
Yeah, me too. He's got to be a regular guest. So you see the basic sort of core visual style element of this movie as a massive off-put.
I got over it pretty quickly in the movie, but when I saw the trailer, it was like, well, that looks like a cheap western, or a cheap movie that they've tried really hard to make look like a real movie.
That's so interesting, because I thought the polar opposite. I was like, look at the star power in this movie. And I was going through the cast, and I was getting so excited for it. And I thought everything looked exactly the way I want it to. So maybe it wasn't that I was admiring the craftsmanship or the look of the movie, but I thought, look at the people in this movie, and look at the fucking... I think I saw the trailer, actually, because I went to see this at the cinema. I think I must have seen the trailer at another showing of something else. And I think I just... couldn't even focus on the fucking movie I was watching because I was so excited about this. Because if I remember correctly, the trailer isn't really a horror trailer either, is it?
I don't think so. I don't even think I made it through the entire trailer.
Hmm. Well, I think if you saw this on the shelf of your local video shop, you would just think it was a straight up run of the mill western, and one of the kind of westerns that was coming out at the time that was, you know, kind of the second coming of Clint Eastwood type era, where a lot of the old tropes were being revisited, and a lot of the... it's like Hollywood had just remembered they could make westerns, and they just started churning them out again. So this is easily dismissible as a cover on a shelf, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. I just think that, like, if I'm going to go watch a western, there are a million fucking Sartana, Django, Italian westerns that I've never watched. So why would I watch a new one when I could watch the same one with a slightly different, with Thomas Milian in it instead of Franco Nero? Like,
I would say because you're insane. That's why.
Well, but they're all good, especially the Terence Hill, Bud Spencer ones. I love that shit. Absolutely.
Yeah, I don't know how this didn't catch your eye. It's got Sid Haig in it, and you love Sid Haig.
Well, spoiler alert, he's barely in it.
Yeah.
He's in it for less than Bruce Campbell is an Intruder.
Yeah, he's in it for like, he's like the equivalent of, what's the fucking, I can't think of anything at the moment today, by the way, I apologize. Who plays Freddy Krueger in the movie Nightmare on Elm Street? Give me a clue.
I'm not going to tell you, Sam.
Well, that guy in fucking Hatchet, right?
Yeah, Robert Englund.
That's the guy. That wasn't a clue. You just gave it to me.
The clue is that he's Freddy Krueger.
You know, all right, let's snops one off here. It's super easy. Should we take a break?
Do the synopsis, and then we'll take a break.
Okay. It's really simple. In a town called Bright Hope, Kurt Russell is the sheriff. His name is Sheriff Hunt. And
a drifter comes to town. And the sheriff shoots him in the leg.
Correct.
The town's doctor, who is a woman, very progressive, goes to fix him up. They get kidnapped by...
She works under the doctor. The doctor is in his cups at the time of this happening. He's drunk as piss, right? And they need someone to attend to the wounded.
Yeah.
So she goes to do the jobby. Her husband, Arthur, is nursing a broken leg. But oh boy, is he still smoking that ass.
Yeah, they get kidnapped. And, it might be Indians. Who knows?
Yeah. Yeah.
And John Wayne goes off to find the people that have been stolen by the Indians. It's the searchers.
It's a classic, you know, rescue the kidnapped damsel tale. Or is it?
Yes.
Yeah, you kind of, well, yeah, okay, right.
It is. I mean, it is, but they subvert that, but it is that.
Yeah. Jamie's bummed. Oh, dear. Should we take a break and come back and find out just how much Jamie hates this movie?
Whoa, holy shit. I guess that's why they call it Phantom Power.
Jamie.
Sam.
Final Transmission is brought to you by Red Scare Industries. How do you feel about that?
I feel like they are the best punk rock label in Chicago. Is that right?
I completely agree.
Did I say the right thing?
Yeah, well, kind of. Yeah, I think we have a real Wayne's World situation going on here. A word from our sponsor. We love Red Scare. We're big fans. We have a vested interest in the success of their enterprise. But we want to tell you for free that they are legit great.
They are very good. They release good records. Some of my all-time favorite records have come out on Red Scare, including Sam Russo Records. So buy them. Buy other Red Scare records at redscare.net.
Oof, we're back. Are you back?
I'm back. Is Tom Bonahawk back?
Oh, I'm back. I just I dozed off there for a moment. I had me a little shut eye.
So Sam, I feel like I need to come clean.
Here it fucking comes.
I fucking loved this movie.
You goddamn son of a bitch. Good. About fucking time.
It was amazing. Break
the tension. Yeah, fucking right.
Join us next week for.
What is next week? I've already watched it.
Ooh.
I've watched everything for the foreseeable future. I'm glad you like this movie because the whole time I was watching it, I was so jealous of you getting to watch it for the first time. That's how much I love it. And, you know, I'm not just going to be the boring guy that tells you how many of my boxes it ticks and how hard. But I'd like to hear your point of view as somebody who only watched it recently for the first time. Must be fresh as a daisy in your mind. What did you love about it? And at what point did you realize it was great?
Well, I want to start by saying what I didn't like about it.
Okay.
Sid Haig sucks.
Oh, I thought he was great. It's the best role he's ever done because I hate him and he was good in this.
I mean, I think he sucks in this and he's amazing in The Devil's Rejects.
Fine. He's just gross. But yeah, carry on.
Yeah, I mean, he is gross. That's his whole shtick.
But when he's being gross in a Western, it works. He's believable.
Yeah. I feel like he's too over the top. She just looks like a caricature of a Western shaggy man.
This is so funny. We both love this movie and we're disagreeing on every single thing so far. I think he looks perfect in this because he looks kind of understated compared to when he's running around like, I don't know, dressed as a gang rapist clown or whatever the fuck his shtick is and everything else. Like, he just looks like a dirty, grimy Western guy that you want to avoid when you see him in town or at the bar.
My homework for you, Sam,
oh God,
is to watch a movie, but that we're not going to talk about for the podcast. How do you feel about that?
I feel fine about it, depending on what it is.
So I think you should watch the movie Spider Baby.
Spider Baby.
It's an early Sid Haig role. It's from like the 60s.
Oh, okay. And is he a biker in that?
No, he's just a weird guy. He's almost like a Pinhead type character.
Oh, interesting. Okay. Why aren't we talking about it for the podcast? Is it not podcast worthy?
It's just not on the list. It could be on the list. I could put it on the list. It's good. It's a good movie.
Yeah. I mean, okay. So let's tally up how many things we disagree about the movie Bone Tomahawk that we both love at the end of this episode.
So another thing that I didn't like is Jack from Lost.
What? Holy shit.
Until, we're in spoilers now, right? Until his horse dies. And then suddenly he stops being Jack from Lost and he starts being Brooder, whatever his name is.
Yeah, Brooder.
He was always fucking Charlie or whatever from Party of Five to me until Lost happened. And I watched Lost so much that he became Jack from Lost. Like, I loved Lost. It was my entire personality for quite a long time, how much I liked Lost. I watched every episode every day until the next episode came out. And then, like, I just kept doing that because I loved it so much. Lost.
Hang on. So you watched every... So if it was out every 7 days, you'd watch the episode 7 times before the next one came out?
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And then there was the movie Alex Cross. He's in it. Jack from Lost is in it. Matthew Fox. And he's great in it. And he plays like a skinny psycho, the Butcher of Sligo. And it's amazing.
Hmm.
And then he sort of won me over, but then I watched Lost again in between.
Right.
And so now he's Jack from Lost again until, like I say, until his horse died. And like horses dying in movies is a big thing for me ever since when I was a kid, when I watched The NeverEnding Story.
And you went out and killed a horse?
No. Artax dies in the Swamp of Sadness.
Right, yeah.
Spoiler alert.
Yeah. Sorry, everyone.
Sorry, I spoiled NeverEnding Story for you.
Yep.
Can't spoil it. It's still going on.
It's still going, bud.
But yeah, so I thought he sucked until the moment that he stopped sucking.
Interesting. So did you think his character sucked or his performance sucked or what was it about him that you weren't into until that point?
I thought he was just being himself.
You know, you see that a lot with Jason Bateman.
Yeah.
I find. He is one role and that role just populates an almost infinite universe of movies. And he doesn't get an enormous amount of, like, criticism for it. It's just sort of casually observed. Does you not buying Bruder until he flies into a horse death-fueled rage, does that speak more to the fact that he's phenomenal as Jack, or do you think he just wasn't really doing what you wanted him to do in this movie until he had, like, a, you know, kind of a spark or a turning point?
I think he's a one-note actor.
Okay.
And he found another note when the horse died. And it wasn't even the rage, it was the emotion of like when he's like saying goodbye to his horse.
Isn't that just part of his character and his arc? Like he's fairly dispassionate, a little bit dismissive and very arrogant and super vain. And then you start to see the cracks when the horse dies because he starts to show who he really is. And then at the end, his death scene is like the ultimate fucking reveal of like the depth of his character.
Like sure, but dispassionate and removed and arrogant is Jack from Lost. So
I suppose you're right, yeah.
So it's he's hitting the note that he knows how to hit. He's singing well within his register and then he sort of he reaches for a high note and hits it.
I'm glad you think he hits it. I mean, you do see this a lot in good to great westerns, in my opinion, where one of your main characters is just on the lowest simmer for a huge portion of the movie. I mean, I love so many westerns, I'm not even going to bother naming them all, but I love so many where the main character is just pretty fucking innocuous for a while until that inciting incident, until that call to action, and then they go full fucking psycho.
Well, we've seen Kurt Russell do it in Tombstone. He is just sort of a low boil for most of that movie, and then he boils over when he has to towards the end.
Yeah, for sure. I think my favorite example of it, you know, foregoing many others, would be in Unforgiven, where Clint Eastwood is, you know, kind of a coward for a huge portion of that movie and living a lie. And then, you know, we have this huge inciting incident, no spoilers, and we get a completely different guy. And it fulfills all of this lore about him from his past and more. And I felt that This character in this movie was never really going to do that because he's not the main character. He's not the driving force of the narrative. But there was so much scope there for him to become. I kind of thought initially when I watched this that he was going to become an antagonist of some kind. That he was going to make things really difficult, or he was going to turn, or there was going to be like some secret bounty or something that he wasn't telling us about because he was so sly.
Yeah, I can see that.
I love what he does in this film. From start to finish, because it just serves a bigger purpose. And a huge amount of admiration for him for transitioning into a horror Western when everyone had him kind of pigeonholed as that, as Jack, like you said. Just a really fucking cool art, well played.
Okay. I mean, that's basically it for things that I didn't like.
Really? That's a short fucking list.
Can I tell you the thing that I liked the most about Bone Tomahawk?
Go on.
Richard fucking Jenkins. He stole this movie. Yeah. I mean, he's been an actor for a long time. He's been in a lot of stuff, and I like a lot of it. But this is absolute career-defining, amazing, incredible performance. I fucking loved it, and I saw it coming. The moment he comes on screen the first time, it's my opinion that Richard Jenkins gives the best performance in this movie and of his career.
Yeah. Call the fucking cops. Officer, arrest that man. Richard Jenkins has stolen this movie and run away with it. Put out an all-points bulletin for Richard Jenkins. Shoot on sight. The man has committed a crime. It is fucking outrageous how good he is in this movie.
Incredible.
He inhabits that character. Because it's a silly goose character at times,
yeah.
I feel like people will maybe skim over it and just dismiss it as the comic foil. But there's so much fucking depth in this guy, and he's such a beautifully written and rendered character. There's so many actors that could have got cast in that role. He feels unlikely for it,
yeah.
And he just absolutely kicks fuck out of it. He is Chicory, and I will find it hard to see him as anyone else, a la Jack from Lost, because... Holy shit, what a career-defining performance for this absolute legend.
Yeah, I think it's almost disappointing from now on, because every time you watch fucking Step Brothers or whatever other bullshit he's been in the last 15 years, 20 years, however long, like, it's not this. He's never doing this.
And the closest I've seen is The Shape of Water. He's touching similar notes, but not in this way.
No.
No.
So yeah, I loved him. I loved how funny it was. I wasn't expecting it to be so funny.
It's such a funny film. I pissed my pants at this movie.
And I was worried when I was finding it so funny. I was worried that we were in, like, do you know how Marvel movies, everything is like...
Nope.
Everything is a comedy.
Okay, well, tell me.
Not even Marvel movies, all modern movies, really.
Well, they do this in the Spider-Verse movies a little bit.
Yeah, like everything is a joke. No, all the moments are undercut by like these goofy little asides. And I was worried that we were going to get into that. And I also think that potentially it's incredibly overwritten in terms of dialogue.
Ooh, overwritten. Okay, go on.
And it sort of borders on like wanky verbosity, but it just sort of clings onto the right side of it.
Yeah.
And that makes it funny. Like, I don't believe that people in the Old West were saying things like, please close your aperture or whatever, instead of, you know, shut your goddamn mouth.
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because this is obviously an absolute fiction, but, and we know nothing really. We've learned nothing from cinema about the Old West, let's be honest.
Yeah.
It's been completely, it's a revisionist history of the most insane, you know, opportunism imaginable. But there is a lot to be said about this particular period late on in the Old West, when the West is being tamed and dying, and people are getting dictionaries and, you know, people are reading more and people are becoming more educated, that vocabulary is supposed to have evolved significantly at this time. And this is something I love about Chicory, is that everyone treats him like a complete dumbass. And yes, he has some like homespun, earthy intelligence about him and some common sense, but he is supposed to be the dumb character. But he has the best vocabulary out of anyone. And that's fantastic. I find that so endearing.
I just like, in terms of what you're saying about like revisionist history, obviously Wyatt Earp was instrumental in like the making of a lot of, or like consulting or whatever, on a lot of OG Westerns.
Sure.
And so obviously he spins the tale that he's the coolest, greatest gunfighter that ever lived or whatever. Yeah. And so history is written by the people that survived.
History is written by the wieners.
Yeah. So like if you are still alive at the end of the Wild West and you were ostensibly a gunfighter, then you can make it sound like you're the greatest person in the world. And so the whole Western genre, I think, is built on a lie. I have no real knowledge of that, but I'm assuming that the people that were talking about it were the people that had sort of lived through it and were like, yeah, I mean, I was there and I was, it's weird. My dick was huge and I rode a big horse and I shot everyone that I saw. It was great. That's what being a cowboy was like. You should make a film about it. Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, that I think that is, there's an enormous amount of truth in that. And I think the where that goes absolutely bonkers is that you start factoring in, you know, the Hollywood factor there, and you start just responding to what audiences applaud in the cinemas, and you start just doing what they want you to and just what they expect. And a movie like this is a step away from that, which I really respect. Yeah. It's 90 minutes of a really fucking good Western. I'd go as far as say it's 90 minutes of one of the best Westerns you're ever going to see. And then it's half an hour-ish of fucking pure horror torment.
Yeah.
in the Old West, which is great. We can talk a little bit more about that for sure.
Yeah, I would say that this is probably the best Western since 1992.
And what was happening in 1992?
Tombstone.
Okay, interesting. Another long film.
Was Unforgiven after that? Because Unforgiven's probably...
Unforgiven has to be...
Unforgiven was also 1992. Yeah. So I think I'm justified in saying this is the best Western since 1992. An interesting thing is, obviously, as we've entered a different time, the way that we approach Westerns and, you know, the godless savages that are the Native Americans has become quite different. And this film sort of says, fuck you to that.
Mm. It specifically goes for these troglodytes. This just like fucking awesome sort of reimagining of cave-dwelling, cannibalistic... I hesitate to even say natives. I don't think that's even fair. Like that, I love the use of the word troglodyte, dude. Yeah. That's so good.
I agree, and I think it's great, but I do think that it is probably what some people would call problematic.
Some people indeed. Moving swiftly on from all that horseshit, let's talk about how this Western becomes a horror movie.
I wonder if somewhere along the line, someone suggested this as a prequel to The Descent. Do you know, like, how they're always trying to fucking put a name on a film?
Yeah.
Like, a script was going around for Lethal Weapon 3, and it became Die Hard 3.
Is that true?
Yeah, Die Hard with a Vengeance was originally a Lethal Weapon sequel.
That makes so much stupid sense.
Yeah, absolutely.
Fuck, I just thought it was trying to rip off Lethal Weapon, but wow. So how did Lethal Weapon 3 actually come about? Because that's one of my favorite action movies and probably my favorite Lethal Weapon movie, controversially.
I mean, I don't know about that.
Well, call Richard Donner and ask him.
So how we transition into the horror? I mean, well, we start in a horror place. It starts very brutally.
It starts with the kind of graphic violence you want to see in the Old West. People being bushwhacked in their sleep and having their throats slashed.
Yeah, it's instant. Rivers of blood, gurgling, gooey blood throats.
But beautifully juxtaposed against the grinning face of David Arquette. Let's not forget David Arquette's in this fucking movie.
Yeah.
Oh dear. How do you feel about that?
I mean, I could take or leave David Arquette.
Oh, I'll take him.
Well, I'll leave him.
Perfect.
That's why we're friends.
What about you, Tom? I'll take him. I think he's important in this film. He's a great vehicle for everything that happens in this film, really. He's like an instigating character, isn't he? And he's a lovable fuckwit. He's more of your classic, like, dumb Western bushwhacking, camp raiding, you know, body snatching scumbag.
Yeah, so I sort of had him pictured more like Eli Wallach's character in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Like,
right, sure.
He's the ugly.
Right.
Because he's beyond bad. He's like doing the most fucking horrible things.
Yeah.
I think
him and Sid Haig.
I think actually in The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly, he's not the ugly. I think he's the bad. I think it's
the bad.
It's the translation that gets it wrong.
He's kind of the bad, dumb, and ugly in this movie.
Yeah. He's also doing the sort of, I mean, if it wasn't for the insane rest of the cast, but he's sort of doing the Drew Barrymore Scream role.
He kind of is, yeah. Yeah. I mean, like you said, if you're looking at this cast and wondering who's going to die first, it's probably David Arquette. Yeah. But, you know, there's not an enormous amount in it. It could easily be Richard Jenkins if he wasn't so magnetic. There's probably no way Matthew Fox is going realistically, but I probably would have put my money on him getting dead first because he's so arrogant and they love killing off the arrogant guy in a Western. Patrick Wilson's in it for the long run because you see him bang.
It's the opposite of a slasher. If you bang.
Oh, yeah, polar opposite. If you've got a magnetic central character who's at least a B-list celebrity in a Western and they bang early in the movie, you've got that guy till the fucking bitter end. He's almost definitely the hero. And if he reads poetry out loud, you got a fucking 6-movie series.
It's not poetry. It's just a letter that he wrote or whatever.
Imagine like a Western version of Scream where me and you are standing in the living room explaining the rules of Westerns to a group of fucking hipsters at a party who could give a fuck.
That sounds like, what is the plot of that movie? A fucking gunslinger comes into town and calls out our friend Sid and is like, yeah. And we have to be like, look, if you meet him at noon, if you don't drink whiskey and cheat at cards and fuck the ladies in the petticoats, then unfortunately you're going to die. Maybe you put a car bonnet under your poncho.
Hitting all the key touch points. This is the movie Tom Bonahawk. This is how this happens. This and Big Pharma, double bill. The Pharma, sorry. Not Big Pharma.
Big Pharma's The Pharma 3, right?
Yeah.
Because
Pharma 2 colon table. I mean, how do you feel about Kurt Russell? Because I am a huge fan and I love... There's just not much. And apparently he's fucking great in real life as well. There's just not much this guy touches that isn't at least good. He's done so much great stuff. As soon as I saw his face, you know, as a leading role, obviously, on the cover of this Western and leading in the trailer, I just thought, about fucking time. I couldn't think of another Western where he'd played the leading man. I don't know if there is one.
Tombstone.
Oh, is he the leading man?
Yeah, he's Wyatt Earp.
Am I thinking of a different Tombstone?
Are you thinking of the gunfight at the OK Corral?
Maybe I'm thinking of Tombstone 2, Tomb Raider.
Tombstone 2, Two Stones.
Starring Bomb Tonercroft. Maybe I haven't seen Tombstone.
So he's Wyatt Earp and Val Kilmer is Doc Holliday.
Oh, that Tombstone, the really fucking long one. Oh no, it's only 2 hours and 10.
Yeah, it's 2 minutes less than this.
Yeah, it just feels longer. So that's got Bill Paxton in it.
It does, yeah.
Now I remember. Yeah. Who plays Doc Holliday in that? Someone
Val Kilmer. Play? It's great. Again, career-defining role. He's amazing in it.
I don't know if I loved this Tombstone.
Well, you're wrong.
I think I liked it, but I think it looked like shit. So here we are disagreeing again.
I think you were too busy fucking wanking off to Young Guns 2 when this was happening.
No, I think I was watching Wyatt Earp with Kevin Costner and Dennis Quaid, because that's my Doc Holliday. Y'all can kiss my rebel dick. It's one of my favorite lines in a Western.
I think
Dennis Quaid, Gene Hackman, that's a cast. Kevin Costner, top of the bill.
Kevin Costner can fucking fuck off.
Be really good in loads of Westerns.
He can be really bad in loads of boring films.
He's great. I love Costner.
I don't love
Costner. Oh, wait, is this where you tell me he's like Mel Gibson or something?
He's not like Mel Gibson. He's worse.
Oh, God. Well, let me tell you.
No, I don't know.
I don't want to know.
I have no horse in the Costner race. I just think he's boring.
Well, speaking of Mel Gibson, this movie is written and directed by the same guy who wrote and directed Dragged Across Concrete.
Your favorite.
A movie that not many people will admit they like because it's got Mel Gibson in it, but it is fucking good. And it's good in a lot of ways. This is too. A completely different genre, a totally different look, absolutely, you know, wildly different plot, etc., etc. But you can tell the same hands are all over it. And it might be why I love that fucking movie. But it's a very stylized Western in a lot of ways. And it's a very boilerplate Western in a lot of ways for 90 minutes. And that is why it hits, in my opinion. It doesn't stray from conventional Western stuff for the length of a normal fucking movie. And then it goes bonkers. I think that's incredible.
In terms of like the stylized aspect of it, I think that there were some things that I really liked about it that you could only do if you're a first-time director. There are some things that are like objectively the wrong choice. That
like
just
what?
There's the moment when they go into the barn, and the barn door fills the entire frame, and it's just like them on a white background with like slats, and like it just looks like it makes it look like they're on like a back lot, which they are, but it makes it look like they're on a back lot. And I think that you couldn't get away with that in the how it sort of stands out from the rest of the movie if you weren't a first-time director. Because you either want to make it look like it's a backlot Western to sort of bring to mind, I don't know, all of those sort of cheap Westerns from the 50s and 40s and 50s, or the Roy Rogers stuff, or, I don't know, Blazing Saddles as well. Or like you want to have it be a big sprawling John Ford out in the wild type situation. And to sort of rub those two things against each other, I think you can only really get away with that if you're a noob.
Right.
But I loved it. I really rated it.
Yeah.
It sort of reminded me that there are multiple kinds of Westerns out there. It makes you sort of remember, sort of weave between all of them. And then there's like the moment where, and I loved this, but when Bruder goes on ahead when they're pretty close to the troglodyte cave, and he's like, wait 30 seconds. And like the idea that they make you wait the full 30 seconds before he throws that fucking stone. I was like, nobody is brave enough to do this.
Yeah.
Like you,
and it's not like there's bags of stuff happening. There's not much building the tension. There's no music. It's just like a ticking watch.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
It's like, I mean, obviously we talked about Intruder last week. And like the influence of Sam Raimi and that is for me an absolute Sam Raimi move, not like a Sam Raimi style thing, but like the idea that like you just have to sit and wait while this director, this writer does his thing.
Yep.
It's immensely rewarding. I think a lot of people might hate it.
Maybe they would. Maybe they do. They're dumb. Like you being made to wait in a movie is something that we will never see again.
Yeah.
On a big screen. It's just never going to happen again. So I drank in every second of this movie that was ponderous, that was timed well, that was paced perfectly, and that openly said, you're going to be uncomfortable for a little while I express myself. Because that's how I live my life. Yeah? And it resonated with me a lot. So, you know, when you see a director who's not afraid to sit in silence with the audience for a little while, and using that as a vehicle to heighten the stakes, to build the tension, to develop jeopardy, that is fucking admirable. And, you know, especially given the star power in this movie, a huge risk and wild swing, direct hit, fantastic stuff.
Yeah, just having Kurt Russell stand there in silence for 30 seconds.
Yeah, that's exactly what I fucking paid for. That's what I wanted in this movie. I wanted to look at that mustache for as long as possible in this light, in those colors. And the thing that really fucking smashes home for me in this movie, it feels like a minor point, but I have to bring it up. The costume is perfect. Yeah. Everything that everyone wears in this movie is fucking magic.
I found like the costuming really anachronistic. And I think that is part of it's the end of the Wild West type thing.
Right.
So, I have no idea if I'm just giving them too much credit or if it's like we're in this sort of era of flux. So, like, you can dress like a 1920s city gent from New York, or you can dress like the frontier gibberish guy from Blazing Saddles. Like, you can be both of those people in the same place at the same time. And it felt pretty weird to me, but, like, I think that's what, even if it's not authentic, it's at least what they're trying to say is that like the Wild West is ending and the new town, the new place, the new era is here.
Yeah, we got bricks now. I mean, and that's it, right? They nail it because, you know, Bruder has the German, you know, he has the telescope all the way from Germany. And that's such a sign of insane status. And he wears this like almost white suit in the fucking desert while he's hunting people. It's amazing. And neither of us are period costume experts. All I know is that this looks fantastic. And I loved your use of anachronistic. Well done, Jake.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
I felt all the way through this movie like they're just making their way to die.
Oh, yeah.
Like it almost feels like they're... And we sort of see this in other Westerns, in The Searchers, that it's a microcosm of like life as a whole. And even if you don't die at the end, the journey is all about like the journey that you take through your life.
Yeah.
And how you act on that journey is, you know, ultimately dictates how that journey ends. Whether you
whenever you die, that's the end.
Yeah.
Whenever on this journey you die, it's over. And I think that's beautifully played out in this, because you know the way that the days kind of ebb and flow, and you start to get disoriented. They change the way they travel when they start traveling through the night, and you know they leave people behind. People catch up. People get lost. People get injured. I feel like that's a really clever use of that, and one of the more subtle ways that I've seen it used in a Western. Normally that's hammed up so bad, and at some point there's an old man on a porch in a rocker who has to explain it to the fucking audience, full of fucking troglodytes. So I think it's done with such a light touch. It's done so beautifully that you do feel that doom and that inevitable sense of maybe not failure, because I think you are led to believe that they're going to rescue Samantha, at least, you know, partially. You don't expect to get there and find something horrible happening to her the whole time, because, you know, Arthur is making this noble quest across the desert with his busted leg, destroying himself to get there. And I don't think any director would put you through that for like a cold, you know, let's just get there and she's been beheaded and everyone's just throwing bits of her around.
I was expecting that. I was expecting really? That. I was expecting, because we've seen how brutal the troglodytes are in the opening scene.
True.
Like,
but do you know, what did you think you were in for though? Because this is your first watch. I keep forgetting. Like, what did you think was going to be the thing that happened here?
Well, I didn't expect a guy to be cut in half Art the Clown style.
Woof. Holy cow.
But I mean, I saw the opening scene and I knew that it was about cave-dwelling natives or whatever. So yeah. I understood that there was going to be a level of cannibal holocaust to it all.
Okay. Right. And you thought that maybe they just abducted her, straight up eaten her, and they were going to get there just to find her dead.
Yeah, I mean, my actual fear was much worse than that. I don't know, a very rape heavy worry.
Rape heavy.
Yeah.
Okay. I mean, that's a genuine fear in the Old West and in the sphere of this movie.
Yeah, like is it High Plains Drifter, where it's like, hey, look, Clint Eastwood's a wonderful rapist. What a great guy.
Fucking hell. That was surprising. The first time I saw that, being told constantly what a classic it was and no one mentioning anything about that, I was like, fucking what? Am I watching the right film? Is this some sort of deep fake? What's happening here? Deepfakes weren't a thing then.
No, they weren't. Unless they were, and they were just hiding it from us, like the conspiracy theorists will have you believe.
Could be.
But yeah, my worry was that, like, we get off very lightly in terms of the trauma that she's had to endure.
Sure.
Like, I was absolutely fearing the worst, and the worst wasn't that she'd had her head cut off and they were chewing on her arms. It was like, it was that they were using her as a baby mill.
Yeah, they already got those.
Yeah,
and
true.
Let me tell you, speaking of getting off light, those women did not get off light.
Well,
when you see that fucking pregnant lady laying there with the fucking logs in her eye sockets, I was like, fuck, you had to show that. You could have just at one point they were like, oh, there are women, but they're blind and dumb and have no arms and they're just used for babies or whatever. You're like, okay, got the visual image, don't need to see one. And then you do. It's fuck's sake. Brutal.
Yeah.
Brutal. But I gotta say, I drank it in. The whole movie, every single aspect of it, the gore didn't gross me out. It made me feel just right in this time and place.
I think that the gore for me, again, I'm gonna compare it to Cannibal Holocaust. It's like it looks so fake that it kind of looks real, and it's almost like presented without comment in the same way that it is in Cannibal Holocaust. It's incredibly dispassionate about like the way that it's showing these horrible things happening. It's like, this is how we chop up the deputy. See you later.
Yeah. Even when they're violent in revenge, it still feels really cold. And, you know, he's making it up as he goes along. Nobody thinks, I know what I'll do. I'll cut this guy's guts open and stuff a boiling hot hip flask in there. It's that kind of unpredictable, spontaneous violence that's done without any emotion that is kind of the most terrifying.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think the only bit of violence that surprised me is when Bruder shoots the Mexicans.
Really? The only bit that surprised me is when Sheriff Hunt chops off the cannibal's foot, or, you know, chops his foot in half.
Yeah.
That surprised me. I knew Bruder was going to shoot those Mexicans immediately because I've seen Westerns and I know what he's fucking like.
Yeah.
I know those Mexicans are dead.
But like, I'm what I mean is not that it shocked me. Like, oh, I'm shocked. More like this feels like there's like a motive to it, or there's a...
Right. It's when you get suspicious of Bruder, I think.
Yeah. I understand it in terms of the cinematic, like what they're trying to do. Whereas I don't have any clue what the troglodytes are trying to do. Like why, again, like maybe they are going to turn Samantha into a baby mill, and that's why she's completely fine, because they've got two perfectly good baby mills at home or whatever. But like,
I was definitely
thrown off by the fact that like they're just sort of keeping her in a cage.
Yeah, I like the idea that they're maybe luring people there with her. I think that's quite cool. I just think they make all this noise. They're not really hiding where they are. They obviously guard their cave, but they're more just out for a scrap. It looks like they don't really have any regard for whether they live or die. I think it's really interesting that they're pitched as being, you know, quote unquote, godless cave dwellers, but they obviously worship something because they have that eerie kind of pagan looking stone and stick structure outside.
Yeah, the whole pet cemetery thing.
Yeah, some really interesting depth to these characters / creatures that could have just been exactly that, like dumb troglodytes in a cave just killing and eating people. But there's more there, and it's really creepy. Everything about them is pretty horrifying, especially the way they attack, their ambushes, the lack of music when they do so. Like, it's fucking cool as shit.
Yeah, I feel like, obviously, we don't see them from the end of the opening scene until basically the climax.
Yeah.
But I sort of felt that they were there the whole time. Like, if they're following them and watching, but I could sort of almost feel them at the edges of the frame, like peering in. Speaking of like no music, there's only one piece of music that I can really remember, and I thought it was incredibly beautiful and just really hammers on how incredibly lonely Patrick Wilson's character is when he's just sort of walking on his own on top of a hill, and it's just like this really beautiful music.
Yeah, it's used so sparingly and so perfectly. Do we don't even get the song out of the pianoforte guy, do we? He's asking for the whiskey.
It's so funny though. That's really funny. And is that your mate and mine, friend of the pod, James Tolkien?
J.R.R. Tolkien.
Strickland from Back to the Future.
Oh, is it him? If it is, I didn't catch it.
I clocked it.
Seymour Strickland himself.
Yeah.
You're a slacker. I don't know. I didn't catch that, if it is.
Pretty sure it was.
Great Western pedigree. He was in Back to the Future 3. One of the greatest Westerns ever made.
Yeah. My favorite Clint Eastwood movie.
Fucking right. I mean, I would say like Back to the Future 3 probably is in my top, easily my top 10 Westerns ever.
Well, you're a fucking idiot.
Dude, it might be in my top 5.
Well, I mean, it's not even in my top 3 Back to the Future movies, so.
Just to piss you off, it's in my top 5.
Is it creeping up every time I slag it off?
Yep, every time you get redder in the face, it goes higher up that list.
Back to the Future 3 objectively sucks.
It fucking rips. It's so good. It's got all your favourite things in it. It's got ZZ Top in it.
It does. In the UK, we call them ZZ Top.
ZZ Top. Don't make me win you over vis-a-vis Back to the Future. It's fucking great.
I like Back to the Future just fine. Back to the Future 3, just fine. But it objectively sucks. I like it. I watched it when I was a child. Of course I like it.
Yeah.
The same reason that I love Kurt Russell, because I watched Big Trouble in Little China when I was 10 years old.
Wow, that's young.
And, you know, now that's my entire personality.
Now it is it?
Well, it embedded itself.
Maybe Bone Tomahawk psyche is your new personality.
Yeah, but I'll be a troglodyte, please.
Okay. You're either going to be a bonehead or a trog.
A bonehead. Trog log.
Trog log bonehead. That's your new something screen name. Do kids do screen names? Are you on the forums?
I'll change my AIM name to trog log bonehead.
Bonehead.
My MSN messenger name to that.
All you trog log boneheads out there, tell us how you feel about Bone Tomahawk in the comments.
All you Tom heads out there, tell us how you feel about Tom Bonehawk.
Fuck yeah. I think it would be, we'd be doing a disservice to the magical master of wonderful modern horror, Mr. Patrick Wilson, if we didn't talk about him a little bit, right? I find him absolutely gorgeous to look at. I think he's very, very handsome. I love his horror acting. He feels like a B-movie star who just somehow wandered into more A-list territory and gets to hang out there. I think he does great stuff. He's in some real shit. This is not one of those. And he's a semi-central role. Do you think he pulls it off?
I do think he pulls it off. I think the magic of Patrick Wilson is that he's just vacant enough that you can fill in the gaps yourself.
Right.
So, like, he has enough presence that he's not, you know, sleepwalking through a role like he's John Travolta or Bruce Willis in the last 5 years.
Right.
R.I.P. Bruce. Is he dead? He's not dead yet, is he? But okay.
No. I'd argue that Travolta was deader, but carry on.
Fair enough. But like, yeah, he's got enough presence that he can move through a scene and you don't think, okay, this guy's fucking asleep at the wheel. But right. There are enough gaps there that you can put yourself in his shoes. He's always the audience insert character, I think, except in Angels and Airwaves, unless, you know, you are a 19-year-old twinkie sex worker.
Which, weirdly, I'm not. Yeah, it's interesting.
Did I say Angels and Airwaves? Because I meant Angels in America.
I don't know what you're talking about half the time, Jamie, so I don't correct you when you're wrong. And to our listeners, that must just be absurd.
Angels in America.
Yeah. Angels and Airwaves, sure.
Angels and Airwaves is fucking...
Patrick Wilson was in Angels and Airwaves. He looks like he could be. He could be the bass player, for all I know.
It's true. Nobody knows what a bass player looks like.
If the cast of Bone Tomahawk were Angels and Airwaves, who'd be Tom DeLonge?
Matthew Fox.
Okay. Who'd be Atom Willard?
Kurt Russell.
Interesting.
No. Be... Richard Jenkins would be, because I love Atom Willard.
You love Atom Willard?
Atom Willard almost steals all the bands that he's in, right? He's the Josh Fries of being in different bands to Josh Fries.
Josh Fries. Ooh, who's a better drummer, do you think? Atom Willard or Josh Fries?
Josh Fries.
Interesting. Who's Matt Wachter? Wachter? He's the bass player.
I thought Patrick Wilson was the bass player. Isn't that what we were talking about?
Yeah, he is. Correct.
Yeah, Angels in America is, it was a play, like a Broadway play. It won like a bunch of Tonys or whatever. And then they made it into like a TV miniseries with Al Pacino, Patrick Wilson. It's about, you know, dying of AIDS in New York. It's fucking great.
Cool.
It's really nice.
Two things. I can confirm James Tolkien was the pianist. Good spot. I missed that one. Well played. The funniest thing I ever saw at a gig was Angels and Airwaves on an enormous festival stage, like just fucking sea of people, ocean of people, all of them revolted by what they were hearing. Booing, throwing piss, hurling furniture, screaming abuse. And Tom DeLonge strode to the front and center of the stage, put himself into his Jesus position and shouted, "You're fucking welcome!" And walked off back to the other end of the stage, doing his big weird moonwalk thing with the flag. It was unbelievable.
Were you an Angels and Airwaves guy, or were you a Plus 44 guy?
I was fortunate enough not to feel like I had to be split between either of those camps. And to this day, I like bits of both.
Yeah, I was a Transplants guy.
I thought you might be, yeah. Tall cans in the air, let me see a fuck you.
2002, baby.
I like the anger of the Transplants. I like the like violent side of it, but it doesn't land really for me.
It doesn't land because they used it in a fucking shampoo advert.
That was wild. How the fuck did that happen? Do you think Rancid just sat on all those offers for all those years and were like, we can't say no to these because they're for millions and millions and millions of dollars. So maybe we'll just tell them in the future, we promise we'll have a project where we say yes to everything. And then all of a sudden it's Fructus Garnier and Nescafe and fucking everything else.
I think what happened was they said, we've made our money. We're millionaires. Right. But Skinhead Rob is not. And therefore...
He needs the dough.
This is a way to, you know, like when you go out with your mates and they've already had four pints. So you slam a load of fucking shots at the bar while... These are his shots at the bar, so he can catch up to his mates.
Okay.
I don't agree with it. It's fucking selling out, but whatever.
How weird for the Transplants to be their sellout project.
Yeah.
I mean, whatever. I don't care, but it's just funny to me that that was in a fucking shampoo commercial.
Yeah, bonkers.
Love it. Got a lot of love for that. However you want to make your money in America, there are always worse ways than having a song in a commercial.
What would you rather listen to, Sam? The Transplants, like an album track off that first Transplants record. No, in fact, an album track off the second Transplants record, the one that nobody ever heard.
I'm not even sure I knew that existed.
Yeah, no, it does. It's called A Shitty Album Part 2 or whatever. So, sorry if you're listening, Tim and Travis and Skinhead Rob. Please don't come to my house and beat me up.
I love you, Skinhead Rob.
But would you rather listen to an album track off the Transplants' second record or the music of the Troglodytes as they scream through their weird little throat thingies?
Can I do both? Because I'm curious about the second Transplants album, and I find that sound really alluring. It's a furious natural sound that I can 100% get behind. I listen to weird shit like that, though, Jamie. I listen to, like, panpipes music and stuff. I'm into it.
My mum bought a panpipe CD off a Native American in Wrexham Town Centre once. Do you know when they used to, like, come round to the towns and play their little panpipes? Were they real Native Americans?
Are they not? Doubtful.
Are they
probably descendants? Further south of the border, I would imagine. Was it called Panpipes of the Andes?
I don't know.
Well, that was a series of really good panpipe CDs. Let me. Yeah, dude, give me that shit. I'll listen to all of it. I'm not averse to the second Transplants album. I'll give it a try.
It was like the panpipes thing was around the same time as that one fucking song.
Ladysmith, Black Mambazo.
No, that's... I remember that. That's the baked beans advert, Sellouts. It's called Return to Innocence by Enigma.
I would never set you up to fool, Jamie, but I really think you need to give us your rendition of that Enigma song right now on the pod.
Sorry, the guy that loves Dragged Across Concrete is desperate for someone to join his little cancellation club.
Listen, it's a good film. I don't care about anything else. It's just a good film, okay? I bet there's a lot of people listening to this who can't say the following words. I've listened to every single thing Angels and Airwaves ever recorded just to explore it to its absolute pits. And I think they would have done a great job scoring this movie.
I have an important question, Sam, about the movie Bone Tomahawk.
Oh, that's what we were talking about.
Do you reckon that Sheriff Hunt likes Boxcar Racer?
Yes.
Okay. Do you think he feels so mad and feels so angry?
Yeah, especially at the end when he is slashed open and has his guts stuffed with his own boiling hot hip flask, which is just funny.
It is funny. It's a beautiful moment from Richard Jenkins.
Yeah, he's talking about the flea circus. Or when he's telling him that he's going to avenge him.
When he's telling him he's going to avenge him. Like, we know he knows that it's a lie. He knows that it's a lie. Everyone knows it's a lie. But it's just the moment. It's great.
I mean, while we're talking about the obvious comparisons between the Lethal Weapon franchise and this movie, I think his speech about the flea circus in that prison cell is Joe Pesci's Froggy speech from Lethal Weapon 4. And it's perfect. It's pitch perfect. It's pure magic. It made me cry. It's just really beautiful. Everything he does in that whole captured sequence is just top tier. I hope he won some shit for this, or I hope one day he's recognized for how fantastic his performance is in this, because it's right up there in my, you know, top 10 character actor performances of all time. It's up there in my all-time Western performances. I just think it's phenomenal what he does in this film.
Yeah, I think this film is pretty well rated, isn't it?
I don't put any stock in IMDb ratings or anything like that nowadays, but I read some criticism of it that said that it's really ambitious and it pulls off a lot of the stuff it tries to do, which I think is about the highest praise you can get from the lukewarm, pissweak film media journalism community nowadays. I mean,
of which we are a part, officially.
Yeah, of course we are. I can't see how you can slag it off, really. I don't see any scope for criticism. But maybe I'm missing some really obvious... Tell us in the comments.
If you came to me and you were like, it's fucking boring, I'd be like, okay, I can see that. I think that it is... What's the phrase that I would use? Like, it's leisurely, it's winding, it's a journey that we're going on. It's like, I don't know, a road movie, but instead of a car where they've got their arms out the window going like this, they're on horses. Yeah. for a bit until they're not. Like, I think that if you weren't predisposed to like that, or if you didn't have something in you that, that meant that you like Westerns, like a lot of people do.
Yeah.
Same as they have the thing that makes them think that they don't like country Western music or like whatever. Like, I think that if you can't latch onto that central conceit, then you won't get it and you won't enjoy it. And that's fine.
Yeah.
Like, go watch fucking Harry Potter 462. Who cares? But like, I wouldn't think you were wrong if you said it was boring. I would just think you were different.
Boring.
Boring.
Yeah, it's tricky, isn't it? Because I think if you think this is boring, you are missing something absolutely key to the film's intention, which is building that sense of suspense, tension, developing the characters, bringing them together only to smash them up. You're missing everything that makes this film good if you think it's boring, because you lack the perspicacity as a film viewer to understand what's happening.
Perspicacity.
Yeah, so you're fucking dumb, kid. You need to get the fuck out of here. You're witnessing a pivotal moment in the Western genre, in my opinion. You're watching it escalated and elevated to a whole new level. You're seeing new depths plunged. You're seeing really brave shit happen on screen in a genre that fucking needs it. Holy crap! Is anything more tired, more boring, more bone dry and dusty dick than Westerns? If it is, I don't want to see it.
I mean, let's talk about modern Westerns, like, briefly.
Yeah.
So, No Country for Old Men rips.
Yeah, listen, if somebody said to me that's not a Western, I would have to say you're probably right.
Like, it's a Western, but it could also, again, you could tell me that it's not a Western. You could also tell me that you think it's boring, and I wouldn't be like, okay, here's a punch in the face, fucko. Like,
fucko.
You can think that. You could be wrong, but you can think that. What else is there?
I think
Fucking Bundercatch Compass Lab film from like 2 years ago. Power of the Dog.
Thundercats.
Was it called Power of the Dog?
I don't know.
Doctor Strange in the Multiverse of Madness. I think that's what it was called. No, it was called The Power of the Dog.
Okay. I didn't see that. Oh, did I? I don't know. If I did, I forgot it, so it's probably boring.
I feel like modern Westerns, they're trying to be more than what Westerns were, which is like popcorn flicks. Do you know what I mean?
Sure. Yeah.
Like, would you describe fucking the longest film that ever existed, Martin Scorsese, Osage? Is that a Western?
Yeah, I think so. You kind of have to say it is.
What's it called? The Plums of Madison County or whatever it's called.
The Plums of Madison County. Whatever it is, it's...
What criminal. Is it called?
I don't care. It was so hard to watch. My favourite... Modern
Killers
Westerns.
Of the Flower Moon, that's what it was called.
Killers of the Flower Moon, thank you. Plums of the Autumn Sunset. My favourite modern Westerns are probably what dumb people would call boring films, because they're clever and slow-paced.
Yeah.
Like, if you're bored by clever, slow-paced movies, the Western genre in the modern era is not for you. One of my favourite movies of all time is The Three Burials of Melquiades Estrada, with Tommy Lee Jones and Barry Pepper and January Jones, and it's a fucking masterpiece. In slow burn, it's achingly tender. It's beautifully made. It's everything that you want in a modern Western. Really, I mean, the same goes for a lot of, you know, a lot of sillier, quote unquote sillier modern Westerns. You know, Open Range, stuff like that. I mean, I guess that's classed as a modern Western.
Yeah,
I love, you know, Unforgiven is where this all starts. I guess the early 90s. I think Brokeback Mountain is a Western. It's one of my favorite films. You know, the remake of True Grit, I think, kind of sucks, but not because it's slow or boring. Like, that's what it does best.
Yeah.
I think you're missing the central point of a modern Western if you're just dismissing them as being boring.
Well, what I think about modern Westerns is most of them have these super lofty goals. And, like, there are some Django Unchained. There's Hateful Eight. There's The Ballad of Buster Scruggs. Like, but a lot of them... And this was also happening in the 50s when the Westerns were Marvel movies. Like, some of them were great. Some of them were Satana, pull your boots up, we're going to the saloon to shoot some guys. Like,
good title.
I don't know why I keep picking on Satana. Like, there are loads of others of those guys, but whatever.
Right.
I feel like we could have more Westerns that are just and entertainment, and a good one. And I think that's what this is. I don't think that we're not reinventing the wheel. We're not, we're sort of recontextualizing because we can't have them fighting engines.
With a J.
With a J, of course. Mm. So that's the only thing that we're doing differently is that we're taking it into a horror place, but it's almost an excuse that we can be doing the thing that we were doing in the 50s.
Yeah. And again, there's a lot of things, a lot of people will be leveling the criticism at this that, you know, is boring, which is that it's not a horror movie. Shut the fuck up. Who cares? Like, it has horrific violence. It has horrific antagonists. And a lot of the key elements of a fucking horror movie.
It absolutely has enough horror that it is a horror movie for me. I think nobody's like, oh, The Descent is a spelunking movie until it's not. Like, do you know what I mean?
What's your favorite spelunking movie? I'd have to say The Descent. I mean, the problem, I guess, with a movie as rock solid as this is that it may not be actually exceptional, but it is so good at what it does
absolutely
in its genre and in its place that it feels like a massively significant experience when you watch it. It does to me, at least, as a fan of Westerns and a fan of horror and a fan of all of these actors. It's too good of a fucking tour de force of everything I like for me to give any kind of credence to the idea it might be boring. Get the fuck out of my saloon.
Yeah, and I think the movie is really summed up. I want to say this and then we'll go to a break and we'll come back and we'll do our sum up after that. But I think the thing that really landed for me is when Samantha is basically saying the reason that the Old West sucks, it's not the Indians or the elements, it's the idiots.
Yeah.
Like, you people are just stupid. Like, I think the comment there is that every Western repeats these same tropes and we're seeing the same thing over and over again. Like, these people never learn.
Yeah. Yeah, this commentary on ignorance is really fascinating. And your noble journey has led you to not only nothing, but further endangering more good people.
Yeah.
it just undermines the whole fucking quest, the mission, the chivalry, the valiant, you know, all of it. And that's beautiful. I love what she does at the end there. She's so sobering.
I think it's undercut by the fact that Patrick Wilson then comes in, kills all the natives and saves the day. Saves the day. But that's fine too. I'm not mad at that. I just think it undercuts the message a little bit. But
I like that. You're allowed that imperfect messaging. That's her fucking opinion. It's not the be all and end all of the movie. The movie doesn't really have a message in that sense. And I love that. It's not like a crusading film that's trying to, you know, change our minds about the violence and the savagery of the Old West. It's not doing that. It's entertaining us and giving us lots of ups and downs and peaks and troughs throughout to fucking revel in. And it does that magically.
I only have one real question is that, like, obviously these troglodytes, this tribe has been there forever.
Mm.
How is it just happening now that they're coming into town and stealing people?
The Troggos. Yeah. I think the town is new, isn't it?
Oh, is it? All right, that might make sense. Okay.
I don't know. I assume it is because what I gathered is that Arthur is obviously a cowboy who's been saving his money. He's been away for a long time and the town has kind of sprung up, maybe, kind of. I don't know. That's not clear. But also, they might be, the Troggos might be new in those specific caves. I love that that's not massively
detailed.
They
could be nomadic or be,
Trogmatic.
Yeah. This car is Trogmatic.
Troglomatic troglodytes.
Yeah. Troglomatic is... Oh, I can't even think. Can't even think of anything funny, Sam. We've talked about...
We've been talking about Westerns for a long time. Let's take a break and come back refreshed.
I'm going to turn the light on. How about that? I'm sitting in the dark.
Knock yourself out.
Will you give it up, man? Nobody's out there. We're alone.
Oh, no, there's somebody out there. I'm picking up all this crosstalk.
Hi, how was your break?
It was a good break, Sam.
Restful.
So before I sum up, I want to ask you, if you didn't already follow us on social media from your personal account at Sam Russo Music, would you now be following us at FT Horror Show across all social media channels, including Twitter.
You can't unfollow what you're not already following. So yes, I would. I would run out and use my thumbs the way they're intended to be used, and I'd be tapping those follow buttons like a maniac, because the content you're going to find on there is second to none. Some fantastic shit that Jamie does that I just like and repost.
Second to some, I would say.
Second to nobody that I've seen. I mean, if I was already at it as well, and I was, you know, doing some thorough social media auditing of my life and following some new people, I'd also be rating and reviewing a podcast that I love, and I'd be doing so generously.
Yeah. Skinhead Rob, if you've stuck with us this far, please rate us 5 stars.
Thanks, Rob.
And tell your friends. Pop a little thing on your Instagram story saying, you know, these guys are cool. Why don't you like them?
Ask your friends if they remember Tom Bonahawk and get them to listen to this shit too. Then you'll have something to talk about in those crushing middle-aged silences that you have in your friendships now.
Yeah,
you'll be able to talk about Bone Tomahawk when you're just sort of awkwardly staring at the floor while some dumb kid runs around in the room, or whatever kind of fresh hell you've got yourself into in your middle ages.
Yeah, like if you're stood with, I don't know, the sheriff that you know, and you're waiting for a guy to throw a rock through a clearing, and you're waiting for what seems like a fucking donkey's age, maybe fill that time by telling Sheriff Hunt exactly how much you like the Final Transmission podcast.
That's a good use of 30 seconds.
It's the only way this movie could have been improved, frankly.
Yeah, as if they dropped a Final Transmission promo in that 30-second slot. We'll get there eventually. I genuinely think that's the way movies are going. Anyway, moving forward, let's give our final thoughts. I'm going to make it real fucking easy for you, Jamie. This movie is a 10 out of 10 crudely grafted tracheal noisemakers in the throat of a crazy troglodyte out of 10 for me. It's a hit followed by a hit followed by a string of big hits. I love the cast. I love the way it looks. I love the costume. I love the direction. I love the writing. I love that it's a Western and it's also a horror. It ticks all my boxes. It pumps all my plums. It's shooting up the list of all of my favorite things. I really enjoyed rewatching it. I really struggled to fault it. I can totally see why loads of other people would hate it, but fucking heck did it do an absolute number on me. Bless the little cotton socks off of Richard Jenkins for stealing the fucking show, and an ensemble cast for the ages. A big win, in my opinion.
I agree on everything you said. Like, it is, apart from the score, I think it's basically the best Western hotel. It's just a really good modern Western.
Yeah.
I love the pairing of the Western genre and horror. It's just cool. It's a cool thing to do to bring those, because obviously when Westerns were huge and horror films were also huge in the 50s, we're talking like Universal Monsters, the twain shall never meet, obviously, for obvious reasons.
Sure.
I think, was there a Billy the Kid meets Dracula movie? I feel like that might be a thing. As we sort of moved into sort of postmodern culture, we started to think about and redefine the genres that meant a lot to us as kids. Mm. I'm talking like in the same way that we talk about like Tales from the Crypt, and the way that Richard Donner and Steven Spielberg and Zemeckis rather were like looking at these things that they liked when they were kids and bringing different elements into it. That's how you sort of move the Western genre forward. And like, you take different things out of it when you're a kid, different sensibilities that you've brought into adulthood with you. And that's why some modern Westerns are the Ballad of Buster Scruggs and some of them are this.
Yeah.
But I think the idea of like Western horror, I feel like the first one I saw was maybe Tremors. Would we call that a Western horror?
You can get away with that, I guess.
Yeah, they're vague. One of them wears a cowboy hat.
Yeah, I'm not calling Tremors a Western, but I'll let you, for the sake of this, sum up. How about that?
I just think it's a cool meeting of the genres. A lot of the antagonists in Western movies are basically vampires anyway, right? Think about Lee Van Cleef in like The Good, the Bad, and the Ugly. Like, he's just... if Dracula was a cowboy.
Right.
and didn't drink blood and didn't turn into a bat and didn't do any
could
of the
walk around
that,
in daylight, didn't yeah. have a castle, wasn't undead. I hear you, just like Dracula.
You know what I
but
mean?
But it's such fertile ground for creativity, marrying those two things. And what I love is, you know, as time progresses, we get this brilliant shift where more hyper-realistic Westerns are made. The gore, the gunshots, everything becomes more real and gritty to reflect the horror of the era and how awful it was for people to live then. And then you get this over-exaggeration of that kind of develops into the marriage of Westerns and horror that just excites me just as much. It's a great trajectory for the genre, and I think it does a service to you know, aspects of Westerns in the past that have been piss poor. It really, really brings it back. So there's a lot of good shit to come, I think, from that marriage.
Yeah. I think about, I don't know, No Country for Old Men, for example.
Mm-hmm.
And like, would you call that a horror Western?
No.
No. Like, I wouldn't either, but like, I could make the case.
You could totally make the case, yeah.
The case that I would make is that Anton Chigurh is basically...
a vampire.
Not a vampire. He's Michael Myers, Wolfman? Right?
Yeah, yeah, sure. His morality is so... his lack of... his amorality, I guess, is one of the most interesting parts of his character, and the clash between that and the hyper-moralistic... you know, Tommy Lee Jones.
Yeah.
And pretty central in that.
Again, like, you could call No Country for Old Men the good, the bad, and the ugly, right? Like, it's...
yeah.
Like, Josh Brolin is ostensibly a good guy, but he's doing a bad thing.
Yeah.
Out of sheer greed.
Yeah. Yeah. It's interesting. I mean, you've got a real fucking linchpin here of the whole Hollywood idea of the hero's journey and how... you know, everything is kind of hanging on that in this mainstream area of cinema, at least. And really, the setting is so vital in a Western, isn't it? And in the 50s, it was this cut and paste version of the West that sucked and was boring and didn't really serve the audience in any way other than that kind of vicarious entertainment, adventure, you know, hyper-masculine bullshit, blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
Whereas now, as the West has evolved, like you said, we're calling No Country for Old Men a modern Western classic because it is the idea of this shrunken yet strangely expanded West that we have is like a new ideal in our minds. So there's a ton of great fiction, you know, media, movies, music coming out of that redefining of the West. You know, if anyone wants to listen to any of those mid-career Richmond Fontaine records, you'll see that in abundance. And the idea that bleeds into horror is so fun.
Yeah.
It gives me so much hope for what we might see in the future from younger actors and older actors alike, because you can do so much with casting a Western. You can do so much with the location and the idea of modernizing it. It's really exciting.
Yeah, I think like it's taking like Southern Gothic to its sort of natural
Absolutely.
Western conclusion.
For sure.
And I love that. And obviously, I've talked a lot about films that aren't Bone Tomahawk, but I think this film is brilliant. I just think it's really bloody good.
What's your rating, Jamie? Let's leave our listeners with a big fat rating from you.
Well, before I rate it, I just want to give a shout out to Shoot the Hostage, because they're doing a series at the moment on neo-westerns.
How interesting.
So that ties in. Yeah. I think as we record this, they've just done Near Dark, which is obviously amazing.
Fantastic. I haven't seen that movie. Maybe I'll watch the movie and listen to the podcast like some of our dear sweet listeners seem to do.
Yeah. And so I will give you my rating now.
Go on.
7.5 deputies out of 8.
That's that's pretty good.
Yeah.
It is the opinion of the backup deputy that is a very, very nice rating of you to give. I'm glad, because I wasn't really worried that you wouldn't like it, but as soon as you were kind of acting like you didn't like it, I thought, well, that's perfect. Typical Jamie. So I'm glad you enjoyed it. What a thing to be able to share in. The enjoyment of the movie Bone Tomahawk. What fun.
Yeah. I mean, this is how you must feel almost every other week, apart from Friday the 13th, part 7.
Tell you what, it's not how I'm going to feel for the next few weeks, but it's definitely how I felt recently.
It's just really good. And like, yeah. I probably would never have watched it. Something twigged in me when I put it on the list and I was like, I've not watched this. It's a Western. It's a horror. Why don't I just fucking watch it?
Yeah, carve out a couple of hours and treat yourself. Yeah. If anyone's looking at the length and thinking, that's off-putting, welcome to my bedroom.
You got there before me.
What you need to do is, much like I tell myself, get over yourself and just do it, because it's fucking great. It's totally worth it. It's an investment of time you won't regret. Fully endorsed by the Final Transmission podcast. By the way, I loved you thanking yourself just then. You were like, I never would have watched this unless I'd recommended to myself that I watch it.
Okay, so can we give the final word over to Tom Bonahawk to yodel us out?
You want Tom Bonahawk? Tom, are you still here? Hell yeah, I'm still here. I'll let me yodel you boys out there. Hold on one sec. Let me yodel. It's been a while since I yodeled, boys. My apologies.
It was beautiful, Tom.
See y'all soon, you crispy critters.